I love you, which I did, or I wouldn't hate her. But I'm not going to turn my back on everyone else. This is so like you. I'm here in this country where I have literally no one but you. I haven't seen my family in over a year, but that's not enough for you. First of all, Edith said, it's disingenuous to take, please don't live with some guy you used to fuck, as please cut off everyone in your life. Her voice faltered for the first time. I was proud of myself for that. That's the practical outcome of what you're asking, I said. Let me finish. That's the first thing. She raised one finger, as though guiding us through an agenda. The twinning of this corporate gesture with her raised voice terrified me. The second thing is, you're so full of shit about not having anyone. A second finger to show we were on bullet point number two. Your co-workers invite you out all the time and you never go. Weren't your old flatmates texting, asking to catch up? And Victoria said you never replied to her messages. Victoria's not the best person to bring into this. Whatever. I don't want to know. Hey, Edith, I said. Just by the way, whatever happened to your many opinions on the nexus between monogamy and patriarchy? Edith took a napkin and brushed crumbs into it. I think my opinions on lying are more relevant here, she said. What do you mean? If you really think there's nothing intrinsically wrong with fucking multiple people, and you're right, there isn't, then why did you lie to me? You can't drag that up. I'm sorry if my feelings on being lied to are spilling over where you don't want them, said Edith. But like my opinions on monogamy and patriarchy, they are many. She had given up enumerating the agenda with her hands now. You said you'd forgiven me, I said. Edith swept the table again with another napkin, though there was now nothing for it to catch. She considered it, crumpled and empty, and then placed it with care in her empty coffee cup. I looked around the shop. It was crowded, but so was everywhere in Hong Kong. The books were menacing. I hated them. The chalky smell, the blackboard feel. Eventually, Edith said, when on earth did I say I'd forgiven you for lying? I said, you said you wanted to meet him, and now you've met. Apologies if I'm being legalistic, but I don't think that means I forgive you. So you're going to hold it against me forever? No, Ava, she said. I'm going to hold it against you until you do anything to show I'm 1/10 as important to you as you are to me. You have so much, I said. You've got a big family and most of them are here. They all love you. Even Mrs. Zhang loves you. You earn twice, 3 times what I do at your job. And as far as I know, they let you piss. You've got friends. We can return, if you want, to the fact that you push away anyone who wants to be friends with you. I didn't push you away. Didn't you? Said Edith. I was always the one asking to hang out. I'd think, this is pathetic, and I'd wait to see if you'd ask me, and then, still thinking, mind you, that it was pathetic, I'd give up and ask. And you know so much more about me than I do about you. The truth is, you like Julian because he enables this perception you have of yourself as a detached person. Plenty of people are willing to offer you intimacy. That terrifies you. You prefer feeling like no one will ever love you. My friendship with Julian is none of your business. You make me feel like I'm not good enough for you. Edith, I said, all you ever do is make me feel like I'm not good enough for you. She picked up her small, tidy bag with the book zipped inside, stacked plate on plate, and then put both our cups on the top one. Come and stay with my family, she said. Come tonight. What? There's a free bedroom. Mrs. Zhang likes you. We need a 4th person for the mahjong. Pack your things and come.
Is that a threat?
No, Edith said. I'm breaking up with you if you don't. But for that to count as a threat, it would have to be something you're afraid of. I said, I'm breaking up with you anyway. Edith laughed, took the plates to the counter, then walked out. Chapter 44, November. At the Cane Road Starbucks, I typed sluggish fake apologies. I did it straight into the message app, at first because I thought this would force me to send it, since Edith had seen me typing anyway. This didn't work, but I carried on, because, with my signature mental clarity, I thought switching to notes would be bad luck. The first draft said, "I'm sorry." Later versions elaborated. "My breaking up with you had come out procedurally," I said. But Edith thought procedural memory only decreed how you said the thing, not its contents, so that wouldn't help. The green and brown coffee shop decor made me think of dying trees. I never saved what I'd written, but kept the template in my head for the next version. The basic format lodged itself so firmly in my mind through repetition that I almost began to feel my behavior made sense. Then I looked at the discarded blueberry muffin I shared my table with, and remembered how things actually stood. The earlier drafts were all versions of, "I don't know why I said that. I don't want to break up with you. But can you understand why I'm scared to move out? Julian's apartment is my home. So I panicked and said something stupid I didn't mean. I couldn't move when you left. I sat there and breathed in the dead books." Breathed is two syllables when I say it, and only one when you do. That could be important, but maybe it isn't. I spent weeks doing this. October turned to November, and still I had no girlfriend. I wondered if I could get a poem out of that. Because I'd typed the first draft apology in the Cane Road Starbucks, I felt it would be bad luck to switch. The baristas came to recognize me, bringing the total number of Hong Kong coffee shops that knew me to 3. I didn't care. If they wanted to look at my greasy hair and pen-stained jumpers and decide that this person was me, they were welcome to. I stopped wearing lipstick and put on whichever clothes I found on the floor each morning, which in practice probably meant I wore the same outfit every day. When we were together, I felt too much sometimes, and I'd go and talk to him to calm down. He doesn't make me as happy or as sad as you do. That means I care less about him, but it also makes it hard to leave him entirely. He's like the Gulf Stream. Did you learn about the Gulf Stream? It keeps Ireland temperate. The first time Julian asked what was wrong, I told him I was on my period. He was so medically illiterate on the female body that I stretched this alibi to cover the initial 2 weeks of the breakup. Then I said things were difficult at home.
"In Ireland," he said.
I said, "Where else would I mean?" There was no one I could talk to. Tom wouldn't get it. Tony or Cyril might, but I couldn't reach out to them when I only knew them through Edith. We'd only hung out a few times, and they'd tried to like me for Edith's sake. And she'd have told them by now. They hated me. I was a bad person who did not know how to love. For the first time in ages, I went to LKF for drinks with the teachers at my center. From the rooftop, the lines of the city spread like sheet music. George Sand had loved Chopin, and he died on her. "Careless," Edith had huffed. We'd listened to his mazurkas on my laptop with the lights off. The blue screen was a lighthouse standing sentry. Later, Edith said there was an app to make the colors warm at night. It helped you sleep. I tried it, but disliked the orange tint. The teachers made me act happy. "Come dance," said Madison from Texas. I came, / danced. A man asked my name. "Kitty," I said. He said it was a stripper name. I said, "Why did you say that?" He said it was a joke. I asked where the humor lay, and he explained it was funny because I was not really a stripper. I claimed to feel sick when I went to the toilets and sat in a cubicle typing, "I'm sorry," deleting it, typing, deleting. "Who drew Mona Lisa?" asked one of the girls. "Leonardo da Vinci," I said. No matter how dire everything else was, I could get immersed enough in their world that I was pleased with myself for knowing things like that. It wasn't just famous people either. I'd provide the verb for what you did with a knife, cut, and I'd feel I'd been handed one of the good brains. This was why people became teachers, I thought. It wasn't to help people. It was to be the cleverest person in the room, always. Or at least to have people sufficiently confident you'd be that they'd call it your job and pay you for doing it. Really,
It was more impressive that my 8-year-olds knew Mona Lisa existed than it was that I knew who'd created her. They told me they'd read on the news that Leonardo da Vinci belonged to a cult, I supplied, and had left symbols, I said, in the picture. I asked whether they meant he was in the Illuminati, tracing a triangle in the air with my index finger. They said maybe. Mona Lisa had small numbers and letters painted into her eyes. They were invisible from far away, but you could see them if you used a magnifying glass. Miss, did you go to Paris? Said one of the boys. He meant, have you been? But I only misunderstood for a beat. I told him I had, and hoped he'd deduce from this that he should have used the perfective aspect. The kids drew the Eiffel Tower on the whiteboard. Finish, Philip Goh said. I reminded him to say a T at the end. Finished. Or better yet, I'm finished. I ticked his answers mechanically. If all students were as good as Philip, I thought, then I could soon be made redundant by AI. In a way, it helped my job security to ensure they kept making a certain number of mistakes. I wrote, super, at the bottom of the page, conscious that a computer could do this also. Someone else said, Miss, do you have a husband? The Edith drafts progressed from straightforward grovelling to something wiry and confessional. I can't believe you think I'm detached. I have more feelings than literally the central nervous system. But that's not what you said, is it? You said I want to think I'm detached. Look, that's true. People hated me in school. At college, I didn't give them the opportunity. I felt like all of me was a secret. I know now it was just that I liked girls, but I thought I had to hide everything. I thought if I let anyone in, they'd find out what was broken about me. And then not only would they know, I'd know too. I still didn't send the messages. In mid-November, Julian and I went to St. John's Cathedral with Miles. We walked up Garden Road towards the bells. The outside was plain as churches went. RV, Victoria Regina, was carved on the tower. Inside it reminded me of the Catholic one in Dublin. Cream walls, dark wood. Miles said one of the pews still bore the royal family crest. It had been reserved for their visits before the handover. I tried to imagine a life so constricted that everywhere you visited, it was preordained where you would park your arse. While it did the Constitution a world of good to get one's weekly fill of the blessed poor, one couldn't risk sitting next to one. The latterly inheriting meek were well and good, but best kept at a distance where one couldn't smell them. Later, Julian took me for lunch at Sarabal on Percival Street. He told me how to pronounce Jengban Guksu and that the Korean writing system was a cross between an alphabet and a syllabary. I wanted him to come out faster and more fervently with his facts, was aware that this was tantamount to wishing he were someone else entirely, and knew exactly who that person was. He lit a cigarette on the way out.
I take it you don't want to talk,
he said.
About whatever it is.
No, I said, but thanks. Edith hadn't opened my Instagram stories since our breakup a month ago. I knew that didn't necessarily mean she wasn't thinking about me, because I wasn't watching hers, and I thought about her constantly. But she was busy and well-liked, and I wasn't. I discovered a trick where I could tap the story next to Edith's, then swipe halfway to the right and see some of what she'd posted without Instagram registering that I'd viewed it. Once, I accidentally flicked all the way over. I nearly dropped my phone. The contents itself did not warrant this anxiety. It was a picture of one of her chai lattes in Shengwan. I screenshotted it anyway, because if Edith was going to see I'd been stalking her, then I wanted something to keep from the experience. I wished someone would hurt me and Edith in a way that connected us. Like robbing both of our life savings or posting the pictures we'd sent each other online. Then we'd hate the person who'd defrauded or revenge-porned us or whatever, and we'd like each other again, without my having to be brave. I didn't really want that to happen, obviously. I just felt anything would be easier than apologizing. I'd been terrified of Edith when she threatened to end it. I couldn't say sorry now, or I'd feel that fear again. I broke up with you because you threatened to break up with me. I felt your power and wanted to feel my own. I did. It worked. I hate it. Chapter 45. I'd survived my first Hong Kong winter without Edith. The second was proving challenging. Julian's bankerish perception of what counted as a trek had rubbed off on me so much that I now spent my life in four places. The apartment, the TEFL school, Starbucks, 7-Eleven, all on the Island Line. In the morning I melded with the commuting rank file, walk, elevator, walk, train, walk, and looked for facts on my phone. I discovered Colombia also had outdoor escalators, that 7-Eleven was in 17 countries, and that Starbucks had dipped into Hong Kong's shark fin trade. Teaching kept me busy. Sometimes I made it until lunch before starting another draft for Edith. I liked women first. Men came later. When I learned what love meant, it was liking girls. But when I learned what liking girls meant, it was an accusation. I think that's why it's hard for me to love. My first memories of love are bound up with my first memories of being hated. I know you've been through it too, and it's not an excuse. But I wish I could talk to you about it. In the staff room, I said I'd given out to Jessica Leung for bullying. The teachers told me give out wasn't standard English. Steve from Vancouver said it sounded like a euphemism. I said Irish English was many things, but a bowdlerizing force it was not. Riding was about the most literal way one could describe sex, for boring straight people anyway. In actual Irish, I said, you'd be egg bula kraken, beating skin. In Dublin, the shift was just the shift. But elsewhere, it could mean considerably more than that. Madison from Texas made to say something. I interrupted her. I felt Edith had taught me much about stoppering morons, and that the morons were lucky we'd broken up before I'd honed this skill to the point of never letting them say anything. I never used to talk about Ireland with my co-workers, or about sex, or anything interesting. I hadn't tried at all. I knew I was mediating my new efforts through Edith's imagined approval, though in fact she hated me and was right to. I act blasé about my family, but I've no idea how they'd take it. I thought moving to Hong Kong would help, but it's given me more to hide. Tom is fine, and I think George and my parents voted yes for same-sex marriage, but so did the girls in sixth year who'd made up I'd shagged my best friend, and she wouldn't speak to me, because they'd said that. Do you know how much it hurt seeing their Yes Equality 2015 profilers? The worst bit is they don't remember. They call themselves allies now, and maybe they are, but fuck. My 12-year-olds were on quantifier nouns. A tube of, a stack of, a stick of. Some words only went with some nouns, and there was, I gaily informed them, no logic to it whatsoever. They nodded. They didn't expect any. This was, after all, English. They did their exercises. As they worked, I thought about Edith. She had once explained that Cantonese counted nearly everything with a unit word. She reminded me that this sometimes happened in English. You could have a piece of news, but not a loaf of news or a bottle of news. And you said two pairs of pants rather than two pants. Then she told me to imagine most nouns were subject to such constrictions. That's Cantonese, she'd said. That's how it works in Cantonese. She had me repeat phrases after her. Yat dap bu ji, a pile of newspapers. Go bat chin, a sum of money. Li pet lai, this patch of soil. I asked when she anticipated I would need to discuss this or any other patch of soil in the near future. And she said I never did anything practical with my life anyway, so there was no need to focus on quote-unquote handy phrases. Another draft. That thing you said about Julian letting me think I'm detached is true. That's us. But there's a friction too. You said it's normal to feel something when there's history, but I don't think it's me still fancying him. There's a level of that, but nothing major. It's more that we can't talk to most people, but can to each other. I'm 99% not sending you these, BC, I'm afraid to. But the other 1% feels like you want me to cut him out, and I don't think I need to. Friction is too sexy for what I mean. I'll choose a better word in the next draft. It's more... we're similar people. That day back when we were speaking, I'd told Edith we did weird things with enumeration in Irish. That two could be go or tho, or a tho, or bert. But that I wasn't sure if the grammar related to quantity classifiers or something else altogether. They didn't explain it in school. Edith said no one had ever explained Cantonese quantifiers either, but she understood them intuitively. Yes, I said. Well done, Miss Native Speaker. Congrats on not being robbed of your national language. She said that if I wanted to play Colonial Oppression Olympics, then by all means. I said I didn't want to play Colonial Oppression Olympics. That's wise, she said, because white people generally lose. I needed to be with Julian before I could love you. I was scared the first time I had sex with him. I thought I'd be bad and he'd hate me. Everything I did, I was scared. I was scared with you as well, but I was ready to be scared. The evening before I went to meet Mrs. Zhang, I'd voiced my concern that I only used Edith's English name and asked if I was ignoring a plank of her personhood. She laughed and said her family used Edith more often than Mei Ling, and that she identified more strongly with the former. She didn't say I was being condescending. She didn't need to. I wished I had her talent for making herself understood. Miss, is this good? I looked and saw that Anson Wu had circled a kilo of books. They could certainly weigh that much, I thought, and more if they were Julian's, but the answer key didn't see it that way. Chapter 46. Julian, Miles and I went back to St. John's Cathedral the third Sunday of November. The sermon was on the final exam down the road. Before Jesus, we would be accountable for everything, words, actions, thoughts. I looked at the royal pew and remembered RV, Victoria Regina, on the bell tower. In 1841, Victoria wrote, "Albert is so much amused at my having got the island of Hong Kong." Edith had told me that, adding that she, too, would find it droll if the Qing dynasty handed her a fiefdom. That night, Julian and I talked in the lounge. He said his ex-girlfriend at Oxford had been like me. She'd hummed the Darth Vader theme when he told her he was applying for city internships. This was fairly galling from someone whose hedge fund father was bankrolling her to do unpaid ones at publishing houses, having secured her said placements by ringing editors he'd met at Cambridge. The ex was probably a better person now, he said. Everyone was terrible aged 20. I said, don't worry, at 29, you've still got it. Wait, I added, was this Charlie the anarchist?
No, Charlie was cool. This was Maddie.
You and your left-wing flings.
Kat's a Tory.
So's Kate Bush, I said. No one should name their daughter Catherine. It would have been funnier if I'd said, let's not name our daughter Catherine. But I sensed Julian feared, as straight men often did, that I secretly wanted his babies. I also avoided quips available to me about why he liked women whose animosity he could claim was ideological. Or why, if you followed the narrative late 20s Blairites often held of having graduated into centrism, then he had matured to loving a Tory, lost her, and regressed to what I was quite sure he thought of as fucking a girl with campus opinions. Or why he hated himself for it, for reasons I did not understand him well enough to torture myself with in detail. Or why the obvious presence of those reasons nonetheless made it hard to look at him while he thought his private thoughts about how at least I knew not to pull the Rosa Luxemburg shit at parties while his friends looked down my dress and discussed me at what they felt was a volume loud enough that he'd hear and soft enough that I wouldn't, despite their standing, in fact, much closer to me, something they very much like to do. There is no more Claude de Vougeot, so we had Claude Delaroche. I said Ollie from Melbourne at work had told me Australians drank wine from a bag. It was called Goon. Statisticians debated whether it was more responsible for Australia's birth rate or its death rate. By the way, I said, I broke up with Edith.
Fuck. You okay?
No.
Want to talk about it?
No.
Want more Pinot Noir?
No.
Want Goon?
You don't have Goon.
I have Pinot Noir.
As he poured, he told me it had a mineral palate, round tannins, and a long finish. I said it smelled like wine. He said Clos just meant vineyard in French. Our vaunted Clos de Vougeot. Your vaunted Clos de Vougeot, I said. I don't vaunt vineyards. Was founded by Cistercian monks. It and Clos Delaroche were among France's many appellations d'origine contrôlée, which made it illegal to use the name of the region without passing quality control.
When Cat ended it,
Julian said, as though this flowed naturally.
On the phone, I'll add, because, importantly, she wasn't in the room. I wanted to throw a bottle. I decided not to, because it was my wine.
So, throwing other people's wine is a sensible response to heartbreak?
Yes.
How attached are you to the Merlot?
More attached than I am to you.
That's not saying much, I said. He agreed. So, I said, can we have sex?
Now?
Yeah.
Are you sure you wouldn't rather throw the Merlot?
Somehow, I wanted to have sex with him, and somehow, I enjoyed it. It was probably the catharsis of accepting he'd never be my boyfriend. I said nothing satirical and accepted his compliments without caveating that I knew just because he liked my body didn't mean I could. It was like drinking something I'd been holding till it cooled, finding it still too hot, and gulping anyway, because I'd been cold too long. Since I felt confident now, and hadn't the last time I'd had sex with him, there were theories one could form about who'd really helped me change. And we still had to make it mean nothing afterwards, for different private reasons. 8 out of 10, bad decision, I said.
9, surely.
8.5, and 7 of that is me.
Rob thinks you're a 9. Which goes to show lawyers can't add.
Julian had quietly swapped Dreamy Seb for Rob since the party in February. I'd know to avoid Rob if the name changed again. For a while we said nothing, and then he said he was often nervous around me. A year ago, I would have given the world to hear that. Now I barely noticed. I said what he wanted me to, that I'd never realized. He'd spent years at public school learning to feign confidence, he said. Probably too much of it for some people's liking, and certainly for some caustic Irish women presently in his bed's liking. But there were nerves. I wanted to ask what made him nervous, but knew I would be doing so in the hope that he'd call me caustic again. He could just as plausibly say, "You make me nervous because you often seem to genuinely loathe me." He could add, "If you hate me so much, then leave." Granted, I am not someone anyone with a healthy attitude to intimacy would want to be with, but if I were, you wouldn't be here. You don't really want to try coke, and claiming you do is not a good look for a communist. Your interest in colonialism is at times morally serious, and at times something you draw on when you're bored of hating me for being rich and male, and you can't hate me for being white because you're white too. When you find someone you can't hate for those reasons, like the cleaning lady, you pretend they don't exist. You're actually very good at getting what you want. You often get it without stating or even privately acknowledging that you want it, which lets you keep seeing yourself as someone who floats. Really, you're more of a saltwater goddess. He would surely specify a classical deity, but it wasn't my fault I hadn't gone to Oxford. He could continue. The above is all true, not always, but often enough that it's part of your character. Beneath it, though, the main reason you hate me, when you do, is that you're terrified of vulnerability. This is so both because others have been unkind to you in the past, and because you don't like yourself and are sure anyone who gets close will agree. That's what makes people afraid to offer you intimacy. They know you'll reject it. You broke up with the love of your life because you saw how much power they had to hurt you. This did not all seem to me precisely what Julian would say if I asked why I made him nervous, but I thought it a fair stab. "Who's the saltwater goddess?" I said.
"What?"
"In Greek mythology."
"Cilicia. Roman, not Greek. Neptune's consort."
"I resent that you won't give me coke."
"Get your own," he said. "Jesus."
Edna Slattery was after painting the front door pews. She'd paid for the paint, also the house, also the painter, so Mam did concede that legally it was all above board. But it was an unfortunate hue. You couldn't trust the Slatteries in matters of decor. Jim had partial colour blindness, which everyone remembered except Edna. She'd ask his opinion, and he'd say it was grand, because he didn't want to be forever reminding the missus of his sundry visual impairments. Edna had enough to be contending with. She'd tell you so herself. Where other people had hobbies or interests, Edna Slattery had contentions. And that, Mam said, was how pew stores happened. "How's Dad?" I said.
"Doesn't like the door. He drives past it on the way to work."
"Poor Dad." "And Auntie Kathleen's over next week," Mam said. "You don't mind if we put her in your room?" "It's more Tom's room now."
"I've already asked him."
"Tell Auntie Kathleen I was asking after her."
"She tried to send you a birthday card, but it got sent back to her. She rings saying I gave her the wrong address, and then she reads it out to me, and she's after writing Mid-Levels, Hong Kong Island, Hong Kong, Korea."
"Where'd she get Korea from?"
"Same place she got Uncle Jer," Mam said.
We discussed when they'd call the abortion referendum. I hoped they'd give enough notice for me to get my flight cheap. I told Mam my British friend, she didn't know him, had refused to believe me when I said I had to fly back to vote.
"That can't be how a country functions,"
he'd said, and then he'd spent half an hour researching the matter before coming back and explaining that I had to fly back to vote.
"That's Brits," Mam said.
She'd told me before about her year working in a London restaurant. She was 19. The Troubles were in the papers, and the Brits asked whether she was from their bit or the other bit, or else era. I felt Brits loved two things more than life itself: showing they knew foreign words and avoiding having to say Republic. Camden was where London put the Irish then, Mam said. I said London put us everywhere now. Had to, on account of numbers. "Mam," I said, "have you ever been afraid to say sorry?"
She said yes. "If you weren't afraid, then you probably weren't sorry."
"Then how do you say it?" I said. Mam said,
"You don't have to say everything. Just say as much as you're sure of."
I didn't ask what to say if you weren't sure of anything. I found it easier picturing myself with Edith now she was gone. We could live anywhere we wanted. No matter what our apartment was like, she'd find a way to make it nice. She would get animated about things and tell me she loved me and tell me she felt scared sometimes. I would start thinking along those lines, then realize that much of this wasn't an imagined future. It was things we had shared in the recent past. I'd broken up with someone who told me how they felt, and I'd gone back to someone who either did not tell me or felt nothing. Chapter 47. There was a problem, Julian said, with the division of labour at the Starbucks on Kane Road. Of the quartet on duty, there would normally be two taking orders, a third making the drinks, and the fourth alternating between that task and running to the stockroom. But they'd chosen Sunday morning to induct a trainee barista, causing a double-edged dearth of labour. They only had three competent employees, and one of them was spending half their time on their own tasks and the other half mentoring the tyro. It was the last week of November. It felt like he'd been back much longer than 3 months, and I wondered if time ever made sense in Hong Kong. We slowly advanced up the queue. I said it was hilarious that the sign on the counter invited new partners to apply. but that I worried my amusement reflected a belief that minimum wage jobs didn't warrant grandiose titles.
You never switch off, do you?
Julian said. You're the one analysing their manpower shortage.
It says a lot about us. What we think is worth delving into. I suppose it's like how Irish has all those different words for seaweed.
I didn't think the analogy made sense, but was glad he'd remembered about the seaweed. He didn't normally retain much of what I told him about Irish. Once we'd sat down, Julian told me his bank was moving him to Frankfurt. I dropped my wallet. The coins clanged against the floor. Leave it, I said, but he'd already picked them up. I took them and clutched them to cool my hands down, but the metal went lukewarm in my grip. It was my turn to speak. I knew I should find a germane question. I said, when are you leaving?
Mid-December,
said Julian.
So 3 weeks from now.
I started stacking the Hong Kong dollars into piles of 50. That probably wasn't 5 euro anymore. Currencies fluctuated. European politics played a role, of course. That's short notice, I said.
They told me 2 months ago.
He stirred his coffee in punctilious circles, as though producing the whirlpool to a requested circumference. I said, why didn't you tell me?
I thought, with Miles, they told me last September. I thought I'd decline it if there was no point in telling anyone until I'd made up my mind.
I'd had more of my drink than Julian had of his, which meant it was again my job to make conversation. Are they giving you a raise? I said.
Yes.
This news was consoling. At least he wasn't abandoning me for the same money in a colder and less interesting country. I counted my stacks. 300 Hong Kong dollars in all. It was perhaps 4 hours' rent.
I wanted to tell you in a neutral space,
he said. I wanted to tell him not to worry because the news wasn't important to me, but I couldn't find a natural way of putting it. Will you miss me? I said. I hoped my voice conveyed that I knew it made no sense to be sad, simply because someone I'd just resumed having sex with was moving away.
I need a cigarette, said Julian. Could we come back to it later?
I'm ready, I said.
You're quite important to me.
Quite?
We've discussed this.
Oh, the quite thing.
Yes, but if you prefer, you're very important to me.
I could have done without the air quotes.
You should visit.
That was the closest he'd get to telling me he didn't want me to come with him. You'd be too busy to see me, I said, especially if it's an important position. He smiled like I'd just paid a small debt, and thanking me would embarrass us both.
Anyway, he said, I wanted to ask. Could you keep checking in with Miles when I'm gone? I know he's doing better now, but he could use the company.
Sure, I said. My Hong Kong dollars were probably worth 30 euro, but maybe less now. The Hong Kong dollar was pegged to the US dollar, but that was only any use if you knew how the US dollar was doing, and their respective liquidities impacted their value on the forex market. Traders had names for the currency pairs. Euro, cable, gopher. Some of the coins were grubby and some were new, but they were interchangeable because money was fungible. I'd known that word generally, fungible, but Julian had told me how economists used it. He'd told me lots of things. I said, does Miles know you're leaving?
Yes, I told him a few weeks ago.
Right. I said it the same way he always did.
And by the way, Julian said, we need to work out where you'll live.
I'll manage, I said.
Can you? I know you said your salary wasn't very high.
It's good compared to locals. They all live somewhere.
With their parents, or else in coffin homes.
It's really got nothing to do with you, I said.
It wasn't what I'd planned to say, but my mouth was twitching like someone else controlled it. Thanks for the guest room. That's all. We're done. Thanks. We mutually agreed, through certain expressions, to pretend I wasn't about to cry. I thought that was generous of us. You brought me here so I couldn't react like this in front of everyone, I said.
Clearly, bringing you to Starbucks has been a very successful way of preventing your reacting like this.
I didn't say it worked. I said that was what you were trying to do.
That's not helpful, Ava.
Why do I have to help you?
You don't have to help me, but it's probably in both our interests if you try to help with the situation.
The situation between us? I don't think there's anything I can do to help with that. I found it deeply unfair that he'd known what he was going to say before I knew the conversation would even happen. Logically, I knew this was not a valid complaint. You had to arrange things in your head before you said them aloud. And it was a fact of leaving that one person knew before the other did. Really, my grievance was that he was in charge and not me. But I couldn't conscript him into staying with me. And anyway, I didn't like him very much. And I didn't need him to tell me how much Hong Kong dollars were in euro. There was an app for that. I'm not talking to you, I told him.
I can see that.
No, but I'm not.
Yes. Evidently, that's the case.
Some people wore not caring about money as a trait. I'd seen online that Julian's ex, Charlie, lived in Shoreditch and said without elaboration that she created. If your work was an intransitive verb, then that meant your trust fund subsidized it. Good for Charlie. Charming for Charlie to be a free spirit. For me, whatever paid rent was the decision. Sometimes there were multiple ways of paying rent, and then I got to pick between them. And sometimes there was no way. I stood on Julian's balcony while I still could. The clouds were bloated and the roads swelled with cars. My first Airbnb had been down along the other side of the port. I'd go back there or somewhere similar. I'd felt different away from the cockroaches, but I saw now we had plenty in common. Insects, climbers. Cold inside. We thrived in hostile settings. There were places we did better, but nowhere could kill us. I hated them, not because they were contaminants, but because they weren't. There were no pathogens they could spread that I didn't carry myself. Living uphill, away from them, I'd forgotten that. I'd thought my blood was hot. That night in his bed, I told Julian we were now once again on speaking terms. He said he couldn't see the practical import of this pronouncement, given that I had continued to say words and acknowledge his responses throughout putatively not talking to him. But he appreciated the thought. But I don't think I was ever obsessed with you in a romantic way, I said, or even a sexual way.
I was never obsessed with you, full stop.
I thought we were past that.
No, I'm serious. The only obsession I've got room for is my job.
Right, because you're so busy and important.
I thought we were past that, too, he said.
I wondered if he really wanted me to visit, and if I could show up in Frankfurt with my suitcase and winter coat. He often said he didn't meet many people like me, but I didn't know if that meant there was necessarily a vacancy for them. He'd managed quite far without me. So it didn't make sense to assume he'd welcome me back in his life. Thanks for your time, I said.
You too. I haven't been this happy in quite a while.
Jesus, you must have been a miserable fucker then.
He laughed. I could always make him laugh by saying something cynical in a thicker Dublin accent than I actually had. Then I said a number of things. I said no one made me laugh as much as he did. Which was nearly true enough to actually be true, and that I'd miss him. And you say it's no big deal buying me things, I said, but you think about money so much, I assume it's not worthless to you. So it's nice of you to spend it on me. You've never been available to me, and I've spent a lot of time resenting that, but it's not like I've spliced myself open for you either. And you introduced me to Miles. You took me to see him in hospital. You've told me more about Kat than I've told you about my exes.
and you are my first friend here.
Thanks, he said. I think most of that was quite complimentary.
He added that he'd thought of something he liked about me.
You're donnish, he said. You're careful with language. You strain everything for its meaning, and you're not easily pleased with how other people put sentences together. Which is an interesting trait in someone who can't orally distinguish between three and tree. But when it comes to money, you've got no taste. And no squeamishness about asking for it, discussing it, hoarding it. It's not often I meet someone who can handle it without flinching. Everyone is embarrassed. They feel compromised by even mentioning it. You're like that about other things, but not about money. When it comes to money, you're a little animal.
He added,
I was afraid to ask this earlier, but come with me to Frankfurt.
I heard myself say yes. Chapter 48. December. On my lunch break the next day, I started a new message to Edith. Within the logic of our imaginary correspondence, she deserved a phantom explanation. There's nothing for me here. You, Tony and Cyril were the only people I belonged with. A little with Miles, a little with the other teachers, but never completely. Hong Kong didn't make me happy, so I guess I'll try Frankfurt with a banker who'd sell his mother to diversify his portfolio. That's not fair to say about Julian, but none of this is fair. And that is okay for me to say, because when I say it's not fair, I mean it's my fault. I stopped typing. None of it concerned her now. She'd once asked me how I made decisions. I said, poorly, what about you? She said she did pros-cons lists. Usually weighted ones, she'd said, because some pros will be more pro than other pros, and some cons will be more con. And you need a column for implications. Implications? Potentially important knock-on effects. Not a proper pro or con, because you don't know for sure that it will happen, but likely enough to be worth considering. I favour the PMI table.
What?
Pluses, minuses, implications. On a napkin, she'd sketched a mock PMI table for me. She was always drawing me things on napkins. I'd asked how she'd decided on law. Edith said it was that or medicine, and with law, you qualified sooner. What about Cambridge? I said. And she said her favourite teacher had gone there. The hardest decision she'd ever made was coming out at uni. Hong Kong international students talked. If anyone had wanted to ruin her life, they could have done so very easily by telling the Zhangs. But as Edith saw it, she would never be happy if she couldn't accept herself. She hadn't needed a PMI table to tell her that, but still recommended the exercise. In 3 weeks' time, we'd be a continent apart. For their second-to-last lesson before Christmas, my 12-year-olds learned that British English speakers distinguished between bring and take. Bring was for things that were going from there to here, e.g., I'll bring you some biscuits from the other room. Take, however, was for things you were moving from here to there, e.g., could you take the biscuits back to the other room? The textbook said a speaker's ability to observe this distinction was a sure way to tell if they were native or non. I had never heard of the bring-take rule. In Dublin, you mostly said bring. The clearly unnatural, incorrect, example sentences in the textbook looked fine to me. I'll bring you to the airport tomorrow. I'll bring my camera with me when I go to Spain on holiday. The textbook always referenced European travel destinations. I practiced in my head to ensure I used the right verb with Julian when he flew off next week. Don't forget to take your suitcase. Will the taxi take you there on time? We'd fought about whether to fly business or economy. He said he'd buy my ticket to have someone to talk to in business. I said people would think I'd paid for it myself and I'd never get over the social embarrassment. Imagine, I said, being seen as the sort of person who'd paid that much money for literally a seat. Julian said no one would ever think I'd paid for business. I said why the fuck would he say that? And he said he'd meant it by way of reassurance. And then the argument wasn't about tickets anymore. In the end, it didn't matter, because work needed me to stay an extra week until the new teacher's visa came through.
That's not your problem, Julian said.
I said no, it wasn't, but that I didn't mind.
I still don't understand,
Tammy Kwan said after I'd explained bring take for the fourth time. Tammy Kwan had my sympathies. There wasn't space for a proper PMI table on Edith's napkin. I went to Muji in Hopewell Centre to buy paper. Near the stationery display, a small white aroma diffuser misted out cedarwood oil. I paid $30 Hong Kong for a large recycled notebook with a red spine. The inside was blank. The woman at the till said she liked those ones because you could fill them however you wanted. In my bedroom, I opened the first page and wrote, I'm sorry. My pre-teen students had introduced me to erasable pens. They liked them because no one would know you'd made a mistake. I rubbed out, I'm sorry, wrote, PMI table. Underlined it with a ruler, also from Muji. Ran over it with a highlighter, also from Muji. And then started. Julian and I had planned to go to the beach on Sunday in mid-December, but the morning news said the shore had been affected by an oil spill coming from mainland waters. White bubbly clumps lined the sand like styrofoam. Authorities were asking why it had taken China a day to notify Hong Kong of the ship collision which had caused the incident. We had sex instead. I liked the authoritative clink of his belt when he undid it. Afterwards, I curled up like a woodlouse and asked why he wanted me to come with him.
I'm not sure, he said. I suppose I enjoy your company.
I don't even enjoy my company.
No, he said. You don't seem to.
So, are we friends again, or what?
We're always friends, he said. Christ.
Don't take his name in vain.
You don't believe in any of it.
I feel Catholic guilt when we're fucking, but I'm not sure if fucking you is the source of guilt or the penance.
Better than Hail Marys. Can I have that in writing?
No matter how acerbic I was with Julian, it ultimately supported his view of himself as someone who could take it, and of me as doing it to please him. He enjoyed my sharpness, primarily because it was an impressive thing to have on retainer. You blaspheme quite often, actually, I said. In bed, I mean. Babe.
Get fucked.
He said get fucked the smiling Irish way. When I first met him, I'd consciously dialed back on it. Also, fuck off, and you're a cunt. Because the English, for some reason, did not find such statements affectionate. I wondered which other phrases he'd plucked. I felt like a bird he kept for quills. I remembered the times I'd lain on my stomach and he'd rubbed my back, and I thought, very sensibly, thief. He liked Irish English because he knew the most interesting words were ones he'd never say. I detested him violently, though I was well aware that the take where I stirred his inner poet was more flattering than likelier one that he'd got used to having me, and I didn't give him much trouble. Which fairly described how I felt about him. I started persuading myself that my behaviour was different, then realised I loved the idea that we were calmly exploiting each other and would both go to hell when we died. If he went first, I'd get a bigger advance on my memoir. Those heady days of pickpocketing bankers, I'd write. And then I settled down with one in Richmond. He commuted, telling people it was because I liked green spaces, being Irish. One could hardly plant a Celtic soul in Canary Wharf, or a soul of any kind, he added, ironically, of course. He married me, took a mistress, and bought me an aga. He denied this last was to atone for his indiscretions, because that would mean either of us had feelings. I often dined with his mother. Since Julian would never be my boyfriend, we'd never marry. The fact that I could imagine a world where we did but not one where we were happy, was interesting. I couldn't tell if he thought I wasn't good enough for him, if I was ascribing him that opinion so I could hate him, or something else altogether. Maybe the something else was that he liked having money, and I liked being good at men. Neither of us liked much else about ourselves. Julian knew he was small fry compared to his clients, and I knew I was terrible at men if my methods made them happy and me miserable. But we backed each other up. Both our egos thrived on him being the richest man I'd ever been good at. Not even that could be the worst thought. Nothing in words was the worst thought. Something was inside me. Every time it hit my consciousness, I redrafted it to something else. But I'd go to Frankfurt. We suited. Julian was nicer now than he had been a year ago, a positive trend which I hoped would continue. I'd no evidence that he wished to change, and probably only thought he did because I'd want to if I were him, which to some minds would militate against our being together, but I didn't care. I said, "Will we keep having sex in Frankfurt?"
"I don't know."
As much to say, we might really be brains in jars for all we know. "How can you be a theist about God and agnostic about whether we have sex?"
"Quite easily, Ava. I'd wager many people believe in God and don't have strong opinions on whether we should have sex."
"Some of them are pretty sure Edith and I shouldn't." It came out before I'd finished forming the thought. We pretended I hadn't said it. 2 weeks left. Then I'd be thousands of miles from her. My PMI table took hours to do. For the waiting, I gave something very important a 3, moderately important a 2, and trivial a 1. When I added the columns, it was a draw. Chapter 49. I packed Julian's shirts with just the bedside lamp on. They'd become so familiar that I took artistic pride in noting different cuts and textures. The Koss one had a white rectangular label inside. He said he thought I liked that shirt more than he did. "Just the label," I said. "It's a nice label. And the cotton smells fresh. What one are you wearing now?" He couldn't remember. I put my hand on his neck and said, "Let's have it off and see."
"You're acting strangely," he said.
I said, "I thought you liked that about me." He said I was tired and that he'd finish packing himself. I stood up to go back to my room when he added,
"There's something I should thank you for."
"What?"
"There used to be a picture of me and Kat on the mantelpiece. I took it out of the frame before you came over the first time."
"The Dublin picture is better," I said.
"Yes."
"I haven't seen the other one, but I know I'm right."
"You are."
"We can take it to Frankfurt."
"Thanks. Let's."
I just printed it off the internet.
"Ava."
"You're welcome," I said. "And thanks. Thanks for everything." He opened the window, lit a cigarette, leaned out and said,
"Are you sure you want to come?"
I said, "Yes."
"I'm not sure you've thought about it properly."
"I'm an adult," I said. In my room, I tidied my drawers. I started with scarves, a few from markets, silk from Mam, and the one Edith gave me for my birthday. They were all too light for Frankfurt. Julian would buy me one, though the fun of that had deflated since I'd realized he did it to fill voids he'd never confide to me. I typed, "How long does it?" into the browser on my phone. Autofill offered, "Take to get over someone." Algorithms learned quickly. The room was cold. I tugged on a polo neck and my head got stuck in it. I laughed, then wondered if this was to check I still knew how to. Not seeing the harm in drafting one last piece of auto-fiction, I opened a thread with Edith and tapped out, "I wish I'd been ready sooner, but I'm ready now. You've changed my life. I'll always remember that. I understand if you never want to speak to me again. It will break my heart if we can't be together. But you miss out on too much trying to keep it safe. Julian can never hurt me as much as you did when you threatened to break up with me. Not because he wouldn't, but because he can't. Because there's nothing at stake.
There is with you. And I'm done being a coward. It's hard to say how I feel, but... I thought, I'm an adult. I hit the back arrow and scrolled through other threads for someone to talk to. Joan, last text, please stay behind tomorrow and help sort boxes. Tom, last text, free to call tomorrow? Sent by me, no response. Julian, last message, will you be home soon? Also sent by me, also no response. Three dots flashed under Edith's name. She was typing. My legs were dangling off the bed. I locked my knees to keep them still and laid the phone on my lap, inching it into place like a time bomb. I looked ahead at the framed London pictures, then back at my thighs with finicky turns of my chin, up to buildings, down to dots. Maybe she'd seen them under my name first. Edith could have noticed me typing just now, or at any point before. Through all my screeds, all my work and reworking, she might have seen the animation. Dot, dot, dot. I knew Edith was typing and seeing words form on her side, but they weren't there on mine, which made them subjunctive, wish or feeling less than fact. Ellipsis meant absence, nothing in the bell jar, no proof, not a specimen. The dots waved like trills on Chopin's staves, turn them how you will. She could be typing anything. And she'd caught me, too. The prospect should have horrified me. The texts I'd drafted in our thread were only some of the total, and all the drafts together only showed a fraction of how frequently I thought about her. And I'd composed a few a day. Edith might have caught me every time for all I knew. But if she saw the dots, it meant she was watching. Also, I wanted her to know. I mouthed it and laughed, properly this time, free of the polo neck. I love Edith and I want her to know. I rang. The dial tone beeped like dots put to music. Chapter 50. In my last week at the flat, I rang to get the tap fixed. The landlord's agent listed spurious damages to take from the deposit. I signed. From Julian's instructions, I learned the cleaning lady's name was Leah and that I was to buy her flowers. Maybe see you again, she said, and I said, maybe. Packing went quickly. Most of what Julian owned had fitted in his suitcase, and I'd cleared out Edith's things some time ago. I brought the new teacher, Sadie, around to meet the kids. Unlike Madison, she was actually from Madison. Refreshingly, she said nothing at all about Ireland. When Sadie had left the room, Katie Chung told me conspiratorially that I was prettier. Since Haiku Gate, she'd been my favourite. Many brought cards, including the ones whose names I forgot. One way of seeing this was that their parents were deluded about my working conditions and thought I had a lot more time and mental energy to bond with their child than I did. Another was that they were kind people and I'd affected their lives more than I knew. Both things, I decided, were true at once. I couldn't quite well up at leaving a workplace that only hired white people and then wouldn't let us piss, but I was glad the kids liked me. Julian had sent me pictures of his Frankfurt apartment. It didn't look like anyone lived there yet, but Noor had the place in mid-levels.
It's strange without you, he'd said on the phone.
Later I'd texted, are you missing the Marxist invective, or... He'd replied,
home is where there's a small Irish person calling for you to be guillotined.
I went to the agency to hand back the keys.
Did you have a nice stay? The man asked.
I said I had. Then I started the real journey. It was after morning rush hour, so the outdoor escalator was going up. Instead, I walked 15 minutes to Sai Ying Pun Station. The turnstiles beeped tautologically. I checked the map to make sure it was Island Line. Cantonese from the throat, Mandarin higher up, canned British voice. The train to Chai Wan is arriving. Please let passengers exit first. My bag was light. I'd given away most of my clothes. On the phone to Mam about the move, I'd mooted throwing them down the garbage chute. She said that would be a waste. I know, I'd said, but so was buying them. Then I decided they'd lose their history faster if I donated them. Soon they'd stretch around other people and crease where their knees and elbows bent. If I'd dumped them, they'd have gone on fitting me. Cantonese, Mandarin, British. Next station, Central. I alighted, as did roughly half of Hong Kong. The suits had all looked black to me until Julian said, "That's too formal for work." In fact, they were craven greys and blues. Children carried school bags the size of their torsos, and their nannies carried instruments the size of the children. One ahead dropped their stuffed Hello Kitty and blocked my path. I refrained from forcing my way around them. It would indicate I was in a hurry. I did seem, though, to be tapping my foot. On the first escalator up to the concourse, I stood to the right and searched for my octopus. If I had it ready, she wouldn't see me fumbling at the turnstile. They ate octopus too, in Hong Kong. It was versatile. My second month there, one of Julian's friends had described the octopus card, an item I owned, by comparing it to the oyster, one I didn't. Then Julian said most Londoners had switched to debit now. They'd had a long conversation about England to which I could add nothing. Sparked by a public transport card I used every day and hadn't needed explained. And that was British men. I had no single anecdote which said, "And that was Edith." But my foot was tapping again. Leaving Central Station felt like going up into the clouds. Really, you were just tunnelling back out from underground. But I could never quite believe that. I looked up at the escalators, the longest I'd ever seen, and thought the sky was next. One more to the concourse. Edith had said exit A, just beside Bank of China. I'd typed it in my notes, found it on maps, and screenshotted it in case my data didn't work. She'd be waiting when I got there. I'd considered coming earlier, but whenever I planned to show up, she'd know, and she'd arrive just a little beforehand. That way I'd be walking and she'd be standing still. The black brush of hair just up. And her bag. I saw her. Of course, up the escalator. She'd reach the top soon and march on. I'd do so too, check my hair and my phone camera, and then go to the exit. She'd be standing there at A off Connaught Road and would look up with a surprised half-smile as I approached. Our coats were both beige. It was as though we'd planned it, mainly because we had. Brushes to paint with, brushes to write with. Composed. I cut into the climbing commuters on my left. The man below me protested, not in English and not in Cantonese either. Edith stood there, half a staircase up. My calves burnt. The man ahead was fast. The one below was gaining on me. And I climbed. I laughed at how close I was. A little faster and I'd reach her step. What would I say? I didn't know. I'd see her and see. She'd ask what I was doing and I'd say, "I didn't know." I overtook the man above, then the next one, and then there was space to run. So I did. It was somewhat ironic to sprint up an escalator that had been built to spare me that very exertion. Somewhat. But I didn't care. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Exciting Times, a novel by Nisha Dolan, presented by Echo and Harper Audio. This program was produced by HarperCollins Publishers Limited. Executive producer, Suzanne Franco Mitchell. Text copyright 2020 by Nisha Dolan. Production copyright 2020 by Orion Publishing Group. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.